Hi, everyone. Before we jump into this week's episode, I just wanted to let you know that next week I will be releasing a very special solo Q&A episode in which I will be answering as many of your questions as I am able to. So if you have any questions about tarot or magic, anything about your practice, about learning, and working with the cards, or perhaps the way that it intersects with your identity or the world identities, the world at large, I invite you to submit those by emailing me at manofthecards@gmail.com, or you can DM me on Instagram at manofthecards. And I'll be accepting submissions through midnight this Friday, October 22nd. No question is too big or too small. So please don't be shy. All right, now on to the show. Welcome back to In Search of Tarot, a podcast that utilizes the cards to examine new questions, question any answer, and reimagine the possibilities of our lives. My name is Nick Kepley, and I am honored to be your host. In Search of Tarot is recorded, edited, and produced by yours truly. And so the project is entirely sustained by the generosity of our Patreon community. For as little as $2 a month, you can support this podcast, making it possible for me to bring you even more incredible guests and thought-provoking conversations. Head over to patreon.com/manofthecards for more information and to join. Please know that you lend support simply through the act of listening and sharing this podcast with others. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please take a moment to leave a rating and review, however short. This is the quickest and easiest way to help these conversations reach more ears. My guest today is Morgan Glover, a tarot contemplative, former journalist, and working mother who is on a meandering journey toward finding her place in the Earth community. She approaches tarot as a practical, poetic, and philosophical discipline, and is drawn towards questions of an eco-soul-centric nature. She's currently pursuing a master's degree in sustainability and environment, and sees no contradiction in reading her textbooks with a deck in hand. She shares her tarot musings on Instagram at mojoglow.
Hello, everyone. My name is Morgan. I am a tarot reader. I would probably describe myself as a tarot contemplative, and I live in North Carolina. I live on land that was previously stewarded by the Kiawe and Sora indigenous people. I live in the Piedmont in the Ha River watershed, and looking forward to the conversation with Nick.
I'm so honored to have you. So happy you're here. And also, we were just discussing that we share a North Carolina heritage and background. So that's amazing as well. And first of all, I adore your work and have been following you for a while now. And recently, you kind of did something cool where you did a complete kind of refresh and restart of your Instagram, which I'm sad to say feels like such a radical act. You know, like, I feel like we do so much curation on social media. And when I saw that you were like, you know, I'm just going to hit refresh and start all over again, I thought that was really inspiring and amazing. What inspired that for you?
Well, I've had the Instagram account for several years and, you know, basically started out sharing, you know, family pictures and different things like that. Eventually, it kind of morphed into a tarot journal. And so had been posting for quite some time. But I felt like after the gauntlet of 2020, I just needed to, and I felt like I was transitioning into a different season. I felt like it was nice to have kind of like a blank slate. I felt like it was becoming, it felt like a weight in some ways for me to be kind of scrolling through all those posts from years ago and also considering the direction I was moving in and not wanting to be beholden to ideas, approaches, conversations that I was engaged in. I felt like it was nice to kind of just start from scratch, so to speak, and see what emerged without feeling like I was tied to, you know, stuff that I was posting about 2 or 3 years ago. So yeah,
I love that. It felt like such a powerful spell when I saw it. I really loved that. What are you studying in grad school?
So I am pursuing a Master of Science in Sustainability and Environment.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, share with us how tarot first came into your life. I'm curious to hear how you discovered it and how you started to learn it.
Yeah, so I would say that my focus has always been on a soul-centric and ecocentric approach to tarot. My approach is influenced heavily by modern cosmology and environmental philosophy. I started learning tarot in 2015 as part of a nature spirituality program I was part of. And my first deck was the Gaian Tarot, and I explored it in conjunction with Mary Kay Greer's book, 21 Ways to Read a Tarot. So that was my first tarot book, and I just started working with the deck, and I was very much drawn to the nature-based imagery, the fact that the cards, like the suits, corresponded to actual elements, air, water, earth, fire, and the contemporary imagery really drew me in. I was not initially drawn to the Rider-Waite-Smith imagery. It didn't really speak to me. It was felt very foreign. But Joanna Powell Colbert's image artistry, like in the way that she illustrated the deck, I felt very connected to. And so I started with that, and then I branched out and started exploring other decks, as many people who are new to tarot start doing. And then what I started to do was kind of figure out like clarify for myself what my reading philosophy was, because I think that the tarot community kind of branches, there's different focus areas for people who are in that community. Like there are some folks who read professionally, and so their practice and how they are engaged that conversation is very much driven by professional reading, like the needs of professional reading, the considerations of that. So it kind of took me a while to get a sense of where I was at. And I think, you know, what I settled on was, you know, describing my reading approach as primarily contemplative in nature. So I don't get caught up in like spiritual this or that. I mean, to me, like life is like, it's all of those. It's practical. It's spiritual to me. It's like all of that stuff. And, one of my favorite poets is David White. And he often talks about the conversational nature of reality and how what we desire of the world will not come to pass. And what the world desires of us will not completely come to pass. Instead, what occurs emerges out of the conversation between the two. And so I see tarot like that. For me, it's a conversation between different parts of myself in the world. It's a space for exploration, intention, and transformation.
Mm. Oh my God, I love every single thing you just said. And we share a love of David White too, which I've seen on your Instagram. And I love all of that. I'm curious about your journey. I think for a lot of people, myself included, when you first dive into tarot, which it sounds like it was different for you, but I'm curious to hear about this from you. A piece of it definitely still lives in kind of the pop culture imagery of tarot, which is sort of divinatory, you know, predictive, magical, all of those things. And not that it can't be that, but I think like the longer I've worked with the cards and the more that I've worked with clients, or the more even just that I've read for myself, and the more that tarot has become about life and about lived experience in life, the more I've found difficulty or dissonance, like marrying the sort of old mythology and old archetypes that reside in a lot of tarot thinking and literature, making that work in modern contexts. You know what I mean? How has that been for you? Have you had, you know, any challenges with that, or how have you approached that?
For one, I'm very, I don't like going on wild goose chases, to be honest with you. If I feel like I'm chasing after something and I'm not quite clear where it's headed, I tend to be in some ways kind of like spiritually conservative in that sense. Like I'm not spiritually adventurous. I don't feel like I need to get somewhere. Like there's some destination where I'm like trying to transcend who I am as a human being and get somewhere or become some spiritual master or anything like that. Like I have not been driven. I'm pretty practical. And I also constantly, like I'm a very, I assess on an ongoing basis, like where I am and if things are working for me. So oftentimes what happens is that we, you know, if we're involved in alternative spiritual practices or start exploring them, you know, we read books, we, you know, watch YouTube videos, or we go to, you know, community events or whatever it is, and we start experimenting. And so, you know, and this obviously is has been a big topic in the tarot and alt spirituality communities, but things like burning incense and working with stones and all those kinds of things. I think that it's important to kind of like assess on an ongoing basis, like, is this even working for me? Like, why am I doing this?
Right.
Am I doing it because I read it somewhere or because someone else said I should do this or because it actually makes sense? And for me, I'm very much motivated by ecocentric, bioregional kind of place-based perspective and place-based, not in the modern era, like air pollution is a huge problem. And like the amount of time that we spend indoors, like breathing the same stale air, like it can be an issue. So like, how does burning incense fit in with that? Like, what does that mean on both a practical and even symbolic level? And sometimes like people don't think about that. They don't think about like the practical aspects because they're just told doing this means this, like it has this kind of significance.
Right.
But for me, it's important to actually check in with like at a physical level, what is that experience like?
Right.
You know, and then what does it mean like metaphorically? And so I think that, you know, I have a very kind of practical, relaxed approach to my practice. Sometimes it depends on how I feel. Sometimes I feel in a ritual kind of frame of mind and want to have that kind of intentionality around my practice sometimes. And, you know, I'm a working mother and now I'm in grad school and I have a dog. And sometimes it's like me, like shuffling my cards with my kid moving around in the background, my dog barking, and it's fine. Like I can do my reading with things going on in the background. It doesn't have to be super quiet. I don't have to like have certain kind of music playing or candles burning. Mm-hmm. It's just me with those cards. And I feel like I'm, you know, whatever message needs to come through, it will come through. It can come through without, you know, all the extra. Because my life is my life and my practice needs to fit in with my life as it is.
Yeah. I think that's so important and so great that you shared that because I think a lot of people struggle with that, especially, I mean, and bravo to you for all the things you're doing, you know, mom and school and dogs and all the things. And, you know, I think it's great that you're not going to rob yourself of the opportunity to work with the cards because you enjoy doing that. So it's like, I'm just going to make it work, you know, as I make it work, you know? And also I kind of think it's sometimes more beneficial when you really are just like, this is where I'm at. So you talked earlier a little bit about the visual components of the imagery of the tarot. And that is something I really enjoy about your work is the way that you seem to you seem to stay very open to what you're seeing in the moment in the cards rather than kind of being, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of being very attached to certain meanings, you know, like in a more kind of dictionary view of the cards. How do you do that? You know, and have you always done that? Or did you start like a lot of people kind of learning the meanings that have existed for a while And then opening up from there, you know, what's that journey been like for you?
I kind of went into tarot with a certain perspective and certain priorities in terms of my own, I guess, spiritual development.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, as I started exploring like tarot books and different decks, you know, I kind of like my approach to them, you know, was influenced by my psycho-spiritual priorities, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I would say that I think it's important to learn tarot outside the tarot, if that makes sense. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you like watching television shows or reading the news or reading books of poetry or books of philosophy or history or whatever it is, like allow that to shape your understanding of the cards.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just a matter of, you know, reading a tarot book and memorizing the card associations that are in the book. I mean, it's also about considering your own life experience and also the ideas that are shaping you that come from outside of quote unquote the tarot.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like it's important to, for me, it's like I am evolving like a living philosophy. So the tarot is helping me hone my own personal philosophy and way of moving through the world.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some aspects of tarot tradition that have been helpful and have informed my approach. And there are some things where I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's not really relevant to my personal practice or the philosophy the questions that I'm living. So they're like specific, there's certain types of questions that I find myself drawn to. And you know, it's like the kind of questions where you're like, you wake up in your bed, like thinking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or when you're at work and you're kind of like daydreaming or something, and like the kinds of things that pop into your head or you find yourself mulling over, like those kinds of questions, not, you know, and nothing against like tarot challenges or anything like that, which I sometimes participate in, but like those kinds of questions are peripheral to like the questions that I'm living over the course of my life. And I may never answer them, but they continue to like stimulate my thinking. They continue to like draw me out of myself, and they keep me curious and engaged and wondering. So I think that as far as the cards, as far as working with them and looking at the imagery, you know, over time, what has happened is, so I work with tarot pretty much daily.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, not every single day necessarily, but multiple times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And especially during the pandemic, what I found was that it was a time of definite extreme stress. And there were certain spiritual practices that I held to and some that I let go of or just weren't, I just didn't, they weren't a priority. Tarot was definitely one that I held to. And there were times when I would feel very stressful or very stressed or frustrated, angry with all that was going on in the world, grief, all of those emotions. And I would just shuffle and pull cards. And my question was, how do I meet this moment?
Mm-hmm.
And so working with tarot on like a daily basis or moment by moment basis, I have to draw on more than just the standard meanings.
Right.
So it doesn't work. I mean, at a certain point, you've kind of exhausted the standard meanings that, you know, you might have learned over time, right?
Yeah.
And so you have to kind of just look at the images. And you know, one reason why I adore the Pagan End of the Worlds is because there's a lot of space, both like literally and metaphorically.
Mm-hmm.
In the cards for kind of like that story to unfold without getting locked in to like certain types of meanings. And so I found that really liberating. And I also found that like during the 2020 in particular, I was very easily visually and conceptually overstimulated when it came to working with tarot. So I have a number of other decks and found that like my eyes just could not land like on the cards because there was like so much symbolism or all these colors or whatever. And so I just found over time that like I just would go back to picking other worlds because it just I wasn't getting overstimulated, overwhelmed with too much symbolism, too much meaning, trying to unpack all that. Yeah. And so that I found that very helpful.
Yes. And we're going to talk about your love of Usi decks in a moment because I love them too. And you do a lot of work with them. I want to ask you before we do that though, do you read for other people or only for yourself?
I do occasionally read for other people.
I'm asking because I love the way you just talked about that kind of reciprocal relationship between your deck and yourself and the way you're kind of always, the way you kind of talked about, you know, your own current moment kind of psycho-spiritually and the way the cards kind of help you reflect that and examine that and move that forward. And I feel that way very much too with tarot. And I'm curious how that lines up for you or shows up for you when you are working with someone else, because what you're describing is a very intensely personal, you know, relationship with the cards. And this is something I've been thinking a lot about and kind of questioning for myself, you know, how do you provide that or what is the role of a reader for another person? You know, because if the tarot really is so intensely personal, you know, what is the role of the reader in a client reading and how do you best, you know, facilitate that? So how do you feel when you're, how is it different for you when you're reading for someone else versus when you're reading for yourself?
I've thought about this quite a bit because I'm a very like intentional person when it comes to reading for other people or just my philosophy about reading for other people. There's a certain perspective that I bring to the tarot. And there's certain types of questions that I'm interested in. And I find that like when people approach me, they approach me because they sense that I am different than other readers. And so for me, it's important to be transparent about what you have to offer as a reader. Mm-hmm. And the types of conversations with reality that you want to facilitate for that person. And I'm very much interested in reading for, like, how do we evolve our societies and our cultures to be ecologically responsible? How do I, as a person living in a city, like, live in a way where I feel like deeply connected and inspired to the place that I live, as opposed to like feeling pummeled, you know, by urbanity. I mean, like to me, like I really love those types of questions. And I feel like the tarot can like has a role in helping us answer those questions. Yeah. I think it's developmental. I mean, there are questions that are like we find ourselves asking at certain stages of our lives. Mm-hmm. And so how do I like hone that and communicate that? So people know, okay, for these types of questions, like this person is going to be really good at kind of helping to, and I don't know if channel is the right word, but helping to facilitate that conversation in a very expansive way. Mm-hmm. Drawing upon both what the like the language of the deck and the possibilities inherent within the deck and also that person's own life experience and years long exploration of those types of questions. Does that make sense?
Yes. Oh my gosh, yes. I need to get a reading with you. So yeah, let's talk about you just mentioned like the specificity of, you know, the deck, what the deck can bring. So let's talk about these Usi decks that you love. And you know, specifically Pagan Other Worlds, like you mentioned, and then also there's Super Oracle and the Materia Prima deck. And yeah, what is it about these decks, you mentioned the Pagan Other Worlds, kind of the spaciousness, but, you know, what is it that draws you to these? And what have you, what sort of discoveries have these decks led to for you?
Yeah, so there are several reasons why I love working with them. One of them is very practical, and it's, I love the experience of shuffling the cards.
Mm-hmm.
They're just, UC decks are meant to be shuffled and randomized.
Mm-hmm.
And also I find that with the Pagan Otherworlds, there's this like sweet spot that UC struck between the Rider-Waite-Smith and like the traditional decks, like Ancient Italian or Terra de Marseille.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes the deck incredibly flexible to read with, because I can interpret the cards based on both symbolism and visual patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So basically what I've done is apply open reading principles to their decks, because they're illustrated in a way that makes the cards a bit more neutral. There's not a lot of symbolism to kind of bog you down. You know, like I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of space there. And so I don't find myself, I can look at them and not get kind of like overstimulated with like a lot of symbolism.
Right.
So depending on like what kind of reading I want to do, and there are times where I'll read with other decks if I want something that's got a lot symbolically to chew on. But oftentimes I don't need all that. And I do, you know, work with like three cards at a time. So I just need, you know, something that's going to give me options in terms of how I read them.
Mm-hmm.
There's also like this mysterious quality to the decks that speaks to me deeply. You know, even with them just sitting on the table, I feel like they're communicating with me.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain like grace and like simplicity and like even like minimalism that I find myself like, they're kind of like their essence in a sense. So mm-hmm. And I do have some other decks that are like that, but then I also have decks that they're just like pieces of paper until mm-hmm. I'm like really like working with them. So I do, now I will say that, excuse me, initially I kind of like resented the Pagan Otherworlds because there was a period of time where, I mean, I definitely value like diversity and representation.
Right.
You know, I'm a Black woman. So, and so at first I was like, well, you know, this deck is great and all, but you know, I just really want to, in terms of like really deeply connecting with the deck, you know, there were certain things that I was looking for and certain boxes that I wanted checked off.
Right.
But I found that, and I actually like, there was a period of time where I would test this deck. I'm telling you, I like put this deck through like the ringer. I mean, I would ask it certain types of questions. I would interview it all the time. I mean, and it would always like answer so gracefully and like, just straightforward, like not playing any games. It's like kind of very animistic way of looking at it, but it just was, I just wanted to make sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to make sure I could be myself. So I do feel it's important with any tarot deck, you know, can you be yourself? Can you be authentically you?
Yeah.
And I felt that I could be that way. I could continue to be who I am. And I am a complex person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes with these conversations around tarot and representation, it can become, the conversation can become oversimplified if you're mm-hmm. not careful,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, we're all, you know, complex, complicated people. There are many different sides to us. Mm-hmm. There are certain, it's not just us. It's very mysterious because we're complex. The deck can be complex.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain seasons in your life that are complex.
Mm-hmm.
And certain aspects of it are activated at different times and under different conditions. So it just really depends on kind of where you are and how the deck speaks to you, how the language speaks to you, the visual language.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that makes sense. I mean, I don't want to ramble, but
no.
But yeah, definitely. In the Materia Prima, I will say that we hit it off like pretty immediately. as soon as I get the deck and do like the first, you know, pull cards that first time. It seemed to like, given when it was published, 2020 was just, I just felt like it, something about the ethos of that deck kind of captured the moment really well. I'm also very interested in like new materialism and the premise of the deck. It's encouraging me to think differently about the material world. Mm-hmm. And I consider myself a very, I'm very much interested in the material world. My spirituality is very grounded and focused on the relationship of humans to the material world.
Right. And for anyone that doesn't know, the Materia Prima deck is based on the Table of the Elements. Have you, and you've done some amazing exploration with that deck. You know, have you gotten to a place now? So also for anyone that doesn't know, it comes with quite a expansive and beautifully written guidebook. I really, mm-hmm. I love the writing in that guidebook, but have you gotten to a place now where you work without the guidebook, or do you still work with it? Or, you know, how have you gotten to know those cards? Because it's very unlike any other deck I've ever come across. And I personally feel that it's like a little different than your average Oracle deck in that mm-hmm. it is specific. It is physical. Like you said, it is material. These are actual, you know, elements, and it does come with this very specific guidebook. So it's kind of intimidated me, honestly. I've used it a little bit, but it almost feels like a whole other system I would have to learn, you know, to really work with. So how have you approached that?
Yeah, I think by the time I got to this deck, I was in a place in my own practice where I could just be free with it mm-hmm. and not get wrapped up in like, oh, is this the right way to read with this deck? Or, mm-hmm. you know, where is this deck taking me? I don't, you know, it's just, I think I was at a place where it was like, I'm going to read how I want to read with this deck.
Yeah.
and just go on the journey and see where it goes. And so I do approach the cards or interpret them in different ways. Sometimes I do pull from the book, the description of the cards in the book. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I read the cards visually. So I look at what's happening in the cards pictorially and kind of generate meaning that way. Sometimes I will actually look up the elements and read about the elements. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what one should do anyway.
Yeah.
Because it's about the chemical elements, and we should know, if we don't, and I don't have a science background or chemistry background. But I think that it's important for us to learn about the world that we're in, how we work with these elements, like in our day to day. And so I found it really, you know, fascinating. I mean, I'm learning quite a bit. I mean, there's some elements that I'm quite familiar with. As a matter of fact, in my course that I'm taking, I'm reading about, it's basically focused on sustainability, climate change, and all of that. And so, like, one of the chapters, it was talking about the composition of our atmosphere. So it's like listing the elements. And so mm-hmm. I grabbed the deck and I'm like just looking, pulling the individual cards out mm-hmm. and forming associations from my textbook with these cards. Mm-hmm. Because like, this is, I mean, if you want to talk about like mythology, you know, this epic climate change epic that we're in. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's mythological for me.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, we're basically living through, you know, the kind of era that our descendants will be wondering, like, wow, you know, what happened? How did they get through this? So I think that, like I said, the book, the images, I have a notebook kind of set aside for this deck where I go through and I write those things down, you know. So I write about, like, I'll look up Krypton, you know. I might go online and look up like Krypton, what's mm-hmm. the history of it, you know, how did we discover it, what's the etymology of the names of elements, You know, sometimes you find that these elements were named after people. Sometimes they're named after, like, you know, mythological figures or places. I might pull that in into my interpretations. I'll look at basically the characteristics of the elements and interpret that way. So are these elements very reactive? Are they super rare? Are they common? And then there's also like the fact that they're ambiguous. And so, for example, like nitrogen, nitrogen is an element that's super abundant, but we can't actually utilize without help. Like we can't, like we need microbes and plant, you know, we need other beings to convert nitrogen into a format that we can use. Even though it's like, I find that super fascinating that you can have, and then of course there's forms of nitrogen that are toxic. So there's like this double-sided kind of nature to the elements where in one context, they're helpful, even vital for life. And then in another context, they're like dangerous or toxic. Mm-hmm. And so I find that that's, you know, applying that to life, thinking about like, in what ways is this situation, you know, generative? And in what context would it be detrimental?
Yeah. What I love about what you're describing and your approach is that it really feels like you're removing the need to like be the singular channel for the message. You know, mm-hmm. like you're, what you're describing is that the cards are like the kickoff point. And then from there you go down your own rabbit holes, you know, and bring different elements in from different, no pun intended with elements, different, you know, pieces in from other sources. And, you know, it sounds more inspirational than like, you know what I'm saying? It's sometimes mm-hmm. I think in tarot, there's this, there can be this kind of weight on people when they're learning tarot where they feel like they should be the sole source of like the meaning, you know, and the interpretation, but mm-hmm. you're taking the weight off of that, which I am really loving.
Right. I think also there's like this kind of perception or assumption that readers are like these neutral conduits,
right? Where
they're channeling information from the spirit realm. And just, it's not something that I'm super impressed with. I don't know. I don't approach reading that way.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know there are some people who are called and they're called to do that. And they can back it up, I guess you could say, in that sense of, you know, having a relationship with spiritual guides and allies. But I just find that like based on my own personal experience, like there is no like neutral conduit or channel. So, you know, I mean, I think yes. We need to follow certain ethical principles. I think, you know, I'm a former journalist. And so in journalism, you know, there are ethical guidelines around objectivity, right? Mm-hmm. The goal is to pursue the truth, to be objective. However, you know, no journalist is completely objective.
Yeah.
The goal is to be fair and balanced though. So, if you're a mainstream journalist. And so there are certain ways to practice where you are not, layering, you know, putting your agenda over someone else, like forcing your agenda, or, you know, this is the way, you know, this is what I would do.
Yeah.
You know, it needs to be more of a conversation, and we need to make sure that we're, you know, we're basically a facilitator. You know, we are facilitating that discovery process mm-hmm. for the person mm-hmm. And allowing them to discover and generate those meanings as much as possible. But at the same time, we do need to be honest that we have perspectives, we have experience. And I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, I'm so with you. I really love that you said that. I think about this a lot, especially lately. And I think also what this is making me think about is what some people describe as intuition and moments where people describe readers will describe, I felt like I needed to say this, or I felt like this message needed to be spoken and I didn't know why. I think a lot of times, maybe not always, but 99% of the time, like that's coming from our own lived experience, of course. It's coming from our own understanding of things and our intuition is only, it's us, So I think what you're pointing to is where I'm starting to really feel the tension as a reader for other people is like, okay, well, maybe I do have this intuitive, feeling that I should say something, but that's my experience. Like you're pointing out, that's not their experience. So I just think it's a really fine line that's there, of like, when am I projecting onto them, my own experience versus how much am I letting them really bring their experience and how much am I staying open to actually hearing their experience, which may be quite different or even, opposite to mine,
Yeah, it's not easy to, I mean, I think about that. I mean, even though, my practice does not revolve completely around reading for other people, but I do think about that, and I have read for other people, for pay, and then of course there's the question of, getting into things like providing like counseling or crossing a boundary where that person needs to be referred for like professional help in some way. So there's all kinds, so I think that, that's why I like the going back to what I said about tarot being a conversation. So I and you posted something on Instagram about, this common saying of like take what you want, leave the rest, or something like that. And one thing that occurred to me is, okay, so you kind of, as you mature, you learn to do this automatically, right? But there are folks who are in a vulnerable situation. So it's one thing when you're coming to somebody and you're opening up, you're vulnerable, and you're seeking guidance versus, because I kind of do that. I kind of take what I need and leave the rest, like as a matter of course in navigating my life. But if I'm in a vulnerable place where I'm going to someone for help, then I am, there's this trust factor, where I'm looking for guidance, or an answer, something that I haven't thought of.
And
Maybe
you're wanting
I'm
that.
exactly. And so my judgment is going to be a bit clouded. I may not be able to think as clearly or objectively if I'm in that position of vulnerability. So I do think it's important, in terms of whether it's helpful to say that up front to remind people that remember, you have some agency. And if something doesn't sit well with you, don't feel like you're obligated to accept it. I think that can be helpful. At the same time, there's still this responsibility on the reader's part to approach that session, in good faith and with integrity, and making sure that, their mind and heart are clear.
And accountability too within readings, which is something I've been thinking about because there's really no system in place for like accountability in tarot reading. So it's interesting to think about. I also liked how earlier you talked about kind of testing the decks out and kind of making sure that they'll work for you. It reminded me of when you are trying to find a good therapist, and it takes a while sometimes, like you have to go through a few different therapist before you really find the one that works, but it's like it's worth the search. I like that you approach the decks that way too. Well, this, oh my gosh, I really could keep talking to you forever, but I want to close by circling back around to David White, who we mentioned earlier, and just the way that you pair existing written word like poetry with tarot, which is something I really love that you do. How does that approach work for you? Do you find the poem first and then pull a card, or sometimes vice versa, or both? And then what has that given to you as you've integrated that into your practice?
Yes, in terms of how I incorporate poetry, I do it, you know, two ways. One is by reading others' poetry, and then by writing poetry. So when I'm reading others' poetry, you know, I might just pick a poem. I may not have a particular poem in mind. I might just open the book and just say, you know, I want to read, you know, whether it's Mary Oliver or Lucille Clifton or someone else. I might just pick something. Or, matter of fact, recently, the book that I did something, a call and response with a poem that was at the beginning of a book. So it was like in the intro, and I read it and I was like, oh my God, this poem is like this is really speaking to me. So let me get some commentary from the tarot.
Yeah.
So that's basically as simple as that. Sometimes I'll read something, it'll speak to me and in a deep way. And as part of my reflection on that poem, as part of my way of expounding on it, deepening it, extending it beyond maybe the original intention of the poem, I'll ask the tarot, you know, what do you have to add to this, you know, or how do I apply the essence of this poem to my life, or just whatever the question is that arises. And I'll shuffle and pull, oftentimes it's pulling three cards, depending on the deck that I'm reading from. And so I find that a lot of times when I do that, it's uncanny how close they are. Like, it's almost like it's just restating the poem through imagery. Mm-hmm. And then other times, it will take the conversation in a really unique direction. So it'll start with the poem, and then it'll be like, okay, now I want you to take that and then go in this direction with it, mm-hmm. you know? And so I find that it's always been an enriching experience for me to do that. Sometimes I'll do this with just, like if I'm reading some nonfiction or something, and there's like a quote or a passage, I'll do a reading around that. I love the Tao Te Ching, and I will sometimes do readings around verses of the Tao Te Ching. Mm. And so I'm asked, because what I'm doing is it helps me form associations with the cards and extend the meanings or the range of the cards themselves, so that over time, and I think I've said this before, like on Instagram, where, you know, tarot can be like a filing system. So, mm-hmm. you know, let's say there's a poem, a David White poem that I really like, and I pull the Queen of Swords as a response. Well, you know, maybe a few weeks later, I pull the Queen of Swords again, and it reminds me of that poem. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, it becomes a kind of like a feedback loop of meaning. Mm-hmm. And gives me more options in terms of what I draw upon to help me navigate my day.
Mm-hmm. Is there a favorite pairing or a recent one that's meant a lot to you that you could talk about?
Sure. So this isn't a poem per se, but this is, I have this book by David White called Consolations, The Solace, Nourishment, and Underlying Meaning of Everyday Words. Mm-hmm. And I remember going through this book and reading it, and I would, like, with my pencil note in the margins, like particular tarot cards that came to mind. And so one of them, so he, they're each, there's like a kind of a mini essay on particular words. And the word in this case is robustness. Robustness. Mm. And I remember reading it. And in this case, I didn't shuffle. I just thought of it. Was the Nine of Wands. Mm. Mm-hmm. And so there is, I'm just going to read just a little portion of it. It says, to be, okay, robustness is a word denoting health, psychological or physical, the ability to meet the world with vigor and impact. Mm. To be robust is to be physically or imaginatively present in the very firm presence of something or someone else. Being robust means we acknowledge the living current in something other than ourselves. Mm. Robustness is a measure of the live frontier in a conversation, whether it is a physical conversation in a wrestling match, a good exchange of ideas in the classroom, or a marital argument in the kitchen. Without robustness, all relationships become defined by their fragility, wither, and die. And so, you know, there are certain kind of like, you know, traditional associations and meanings applied to the Knight of Wands, but I felt like that word robust, like moving through life in that way, where I'm willing to engage in a way where I'm not engaging in a way that feels fragile, mm-hmm. or like I'm not up to the challenge. Mm-hmm. And so, and then in terms of, I'm trying to think of a case where I shuffled and drew cards. I think I posted this. So this is where I pulled from the Materia Prima. Mm-hmm. And so this, there was a poem or lines from a poem from Adrienne Rich and it reads, "My heart is moved by all I cannot save. So much has been destroyed. I have to cast my lot with those who age after age, perversely and with no extraordinary power, reconstitute the world." And mm-hmm. so I decided to shuffle Materia Prima, and I pulled indium, osmium, and calcium. And so the response that I got was, recognize that the systems that enslave you have been obsolete for some time. You can learn a different rhythm and join the rest of the earth community in the work of repair and regeneration. And one of the things that stood out to me was, so there's the phrase reconstitute the world, and calcium, where calcium, which our bones are made of, mm-hmm. you know, think about just this very slow building process that's occurring on this molecular level, right? Of something taking form, something taking shape. Mm-hmm. You know, our bones give our body shape, and whether it's, you know, a seashell, which in this case, in the calcium card, is what's depicted, you know, or, you know, our bodies, our bones, like thinking about like how in reconstituting the world, you know, we are having to slowly rebuild the world, mm-hmm. like collaboratively and collectively contribute to this. And of course, in the industrial era, you know, it's all about speed. It's all about like doing things fast, right? It's about quarterly profits, which is part of the reason why we're in the mess that we're in, is because we're working outside the logic of the earth, which operates on different time scales. So when I pulled calcium, it was like the ending of that poem and then the ending of that spread. And so I was just basically just, you know, it was a nice, kind of poetic response to that, to the lines of that poem, that gave me something to think about, and but not in a super literal way, right?
Yeah.
I think that's where with oracles, you know, and with this particular oracle, it's not about being super literal. It's about where does that image or where does that metaphor take you?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And also the calcium bit of the bones made me think about when I was a dancer, I broke my foot and the doctor said, You're lucky because this was a really clean break and it'll actually grow back even stronger than it was originally. But if you have stress fractures that have been occurring and then finally it breaks, apparently that's a much harder process to grow back and doesn't grow back as strong. But if it's a clean break, it grows back stronger. So that's kind of interesting to think about too, with like reconstituting, you know, if you can make like a clean break, maybe it is easier to grow back or something. I don't know. That's really interesting. Yeah. Well, this has been absolutely extraordinary. I'm very grateful we got to connect. And I would love for you to just share with everyone how they can follow your work and if there's anything you're doing or any projects you want to talk about or anything, but just definitely how people can find you and follow what you do.
Sure. So I'm on Instagram at MojoGlow, MojoGlow. My account's currently like on private, but I do approve follows. Instagram's kind of a mess right now.
Yes, yes.
That's why it's like that.
Yep.
But yeah, right now I would say, so I am considering like, or am in the process of like writing like a supplementary guide to working with the Pagan Otherworlds. Because one thing that I found, I used to like go on YouTube and go online and look to see if anyone else was writing other than like basic walkthroughs of this deck, like writing about working with it, and couldn't really find anything. I'd say, well, I'll just probably just do something myself. So that's kind of like what I'm working on. And it's helping me kind of better understand and articulate to myself the types of tarot decks that speak the best to me most effectively. I think the one thing that I am interested in terms of the conversation is how do you determine or discern what the oracular voice of a deck is? Like, how does a deck actually communicate? Because I think going back to what you were saying, there's just like, oh, it's intuition or it's this or that, like these vague. And I'm very much interested in like structurally, like why is it that certain decks generate certain approaches to reading over others? And so this project kind of helps me articulate to myself, like, why is it that this particular deck I'm able to read this way?
Oh my gosh, I love it. Oh my gosh. All right, well, Morgan, thank you. Thank you again for being with me today. Thank you for sharing all of this. In Search of Tarot is hosted, edited, and produced by Nick Kepley. Theme music was written and recorded by AJ Ackleson. A transcript of this episode is available online at manofthecards.com/transcripts.